Labor Day has passed and the kids have returned to schools, which means the official end to the summer movie season. Despite a large crop of high-profile action and adventure films, the summer of 2014 has gone down as a less-than-stellar year for Hollywood, if you judge movies like an accountant. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. To help review the movies of summer and give a few recommendations, I'm happy to have back on the program fellow Broadcast Film Critics Association member Philippa Solis. Good morning.
Good morning. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, Labor Day has passed, which
yes,
is the official end of at least summer when movies are concerned. We should just mention that there's a lot of articles that have come out over the last week, gloom and doom, showing that this year's summer movies brought in about 15% less box office than last year, which was a record last year, but the worst summer in 7 years by box office standards, and even worse if you consider attendance. I think it's a 17-year low in attendance. So has a lot of prognosticators saying the end is nigh, which I'm not sure is the case. But it certainly seems in the last decade particularly that the only metric being used in the summer anymore is box office.
Well, absolutely. And that's because he with the most toys wins. The more 3D glasses you can sell and the more butts in seats that are movable and shakable, it is more kid-friendly. And, of course, it's getting more and more expensive for families to go to the movies. We're lucky here in El Paso. We're always looking for a nice air-conditioned spot. Mm-hmm. So the movie theater is the perfect place to be. But this year, there is one film that has kind of broken the bank that I certainly didn't expect, and that was Guardians of the Galaxy,
right,
which I thought was one of the most entertaining summer films I've seen in quite some time. And everyone was, it was a down-to-film, a latecomer. Yes. And it was very down-to-earth, wonderful cast with everyone from Chris Pratt, Vin Diesel in the most amazing role probably, I think, in his career, the very charming and wonderful Bradley Cooper, and on it went. And I was very happy to see that that film that I thought, oh, here I go to see another Marvel film, just kind of blew me away. And it was kind of a little bit of a tearjerker, and it was just a great soundtrack. So I think that one was great. Also, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, mm-hmm, I really absolutely enjoyed because I was kind of lost in between the films since Roddy McDowall. And
this is one of the prequels now, the reboots of the original 60s and 70s series.
That's right. So it's kind of the Star Wars of the original 1968 Charlton Heston film. But it was very well done. I thought the acting was wonderful. Andy Serkis can do no wrong as far as I'm concerned. So those were some films. But when you talk about box office, there were a couple of films, too, that were kind of hidden and more the film festival darlings. Mm-hmm. And that was Chef, which actually did start to pick up a lot of people because of the talk, because it was really a charming, endearing film. And that was Jon Favreau and John Leguizamo, and it was just absolutely wonderful. And a film called Boyhood.
Right, the Richard Linklater film.
Richard Linklater and Ethan Hawke, who together, those two can make magic, and that's not necessarily box office fodder, but it's artistic. That was a movie that I think we'll see during award season.
And I think Richard Linklater is still, in his age group, one of the most fascinating directors. He's not that old. I mean, he's probably in his early 50s now, but Austin-based and has always been there and is always challenging himself with his projects. And this was a project that took some 11 or 12 years to make that they shot off and on so that the boy in Boyhood actually grows up as you watch the film. Fascinating way to make a movie.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the things you're talking about, and one of the reasons we're recapping the summer is not just to think back over what happened, but a lot of these films are soon to be on Blu-ray and home video or streaming, and some of them actually are already. So this is also kind of a recommendation list for people who missed some of this.
Well, absolutely. And Guardians of the Galaxy, although it may not be good for younger children because of language involved, was a wonderful film to watch, and I think that is something to look forward to on Blu-ray. Also, like I said, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And I did enjoy Godzilla. I got my Godzilla satisfaction, and it was a wonderful cast, And I thought that that was not a bad way to kick off the summer. I remember that was right before Memorial Day weekend, and it was enjoyable. And I think that would be something that families can sit down and watch, and even parents can reminisce about the old school Godzilla. But there were some that we didn't like, though.
I think, you know, both that and Planet of the Apes are both, you know, classic franchises that studios now are trying to reboot, and sometimes unsuccessfully. But Godzilla has actually had several attempts over the last decade or 15 years to get it going again. And this probably comes closest to capturing some of the magic of the original early Godzilla films while also updating it to modern times. I totally agree. It's a recommendation on my list, A for effort. However, the storytelling really is one-dimensional in there, and Gareth Edwards is a director, though, to watch. If people like Godzilla, they should certainly see his earlier film, Monsters, which he shot, wrote, edited, directed. I think he did all of the special effects in it himself. It's a very small film he shot in Mexico, and the precursor to this. So now working with a big budget. I wondered, though, in Godzilla, did you get a sense that there were a few scenes where I felt like they were just gorgeous to look at, but they were in the film simply because they were going to make for really great-looking scenes.
Well, I think that's when you look at a film like Godzilla, you're not going to have a Paddy Chayefsky screenplay. It's just not going to happen. So I was overwhelmed by that very aspect of the film, that it was pretty to watch, and I'm waiting for Gojira to come out of the water and, you know, save the planet, sort of, and eat whoever he needs to eat along the way.
I think what they really got right in Godzilla was the physics of the world seemed right. So often in these big CGI, computer-generated, special effects-laden films, they don't have a sense of reality. And the way these creatures move, and again, Gareth Brooks, I think, is really excellent at doing this. You really get a sense of their scale and weight as they destroy cities. But the other thing he did that I thought was really interesting was a lot of those destruction scenes where most directors would focus on the creatures and just the wanton destruction. He really grounds them at a mostly human eye view. You often get in the foreground human beings doing something, and the creatures are a background to that, which I thought was a novel approach, but the script, I think, just falls down. And this is a film that has Bryan Cranston, Ken Watanabe, Juliette Binoche, Elizabeth Olsen, Sally Hawkins, David Strathern. I mean,
yeah, that
my
was
goodness.
When I saw that, I think wasn't Kelsey Grammer in it too?
Right.
I mean, it was just like, wow, this is an ethereal
cast. What
could
have been? I kept thinking, what could have been?
Well, Bryan Cranston got me in, so that was, I was like, Bryan Cranston's there, I'm there. But even when you're talking about the view of the person, I always think about King Kong, because that was so not CGI'd back in the day. And Fay Wray's viewpoint of this giant thing was just amazing, because he also kind of had a heart of gold. So I always I like that aspect of it, when the monster kind of goes, okay, I'm there with you guys. I do like that. It was very interesting, because there were some Japanese film reviewers who said that they found that this version of Godzilla had put on the lbs, that he was a little heavier than
he is heavy.
Most Godzillas
just
that
right for
had.
Americans, so
yes we're just excessive with our monsters.
You mentioned Chef and Boyhood, both very small independent films that came out. And we're starting to see a little bit more of that. And it seems like the summer is now prolonged all the way into April, with Captain America, The Winter Soldier, beginning in April. And I was, two of my favorite films of the year are out on Blu-ray now. And they initially were released in the U.S. in April, but I don't think they came to El Paso until the summer. So I'll count them as summer films. But Under the Skin, the very unusual British science fiction, almost experimental film starring Scarlett Johansson, is out now, and Only Lovers Left Alive, which you know, is the great Jim Jarmusch's indie take on vampire genre, that you thought there was nothing left to do with vampires, and it's a fascinating film with Tilda Swinton and Tom Hiddleston, which I highly recommend as well. And both those films were out, and came, you know, it's great that these things are beginning to come to El Paso.
Props to our friends across the way, because the film The Lunchbox, which was absolutely brilliant, was at the Fountain Theater. And that was released, I believe, in May of this year. So it's kind of, like you say, a precursor to the summer. But that, too, was a wonderful film. So I'm glad that we have some venues whereby we can catch these films before they come from behind and go, wait a minute, where did that come from?
Under the Skin, I should caution people, it's not for everyone. If you can't sit still, perfectly still, for 90 minutes.
Whoops.
and watch a film that is almost wordless. I mean, there is a little bit of dialogue, but an extremely small amount. Scarlett Johansson playing I don't want to give anything away, but she may be extraterrestrial and she may be a serial killer, but is fascinated by human nature and those around her. But it's a fascinating British film, and one that I highly recommend, from Jonathan Glazer, the British director. People may know his earlier work of Sexy Beast. Mm-hmm. One that I think you and I diverged a little bit on was How to Train Your Dragon 2, which I really found charming and beautiful to look at, and can recommend to a lot of people.
Well, it was good for the kids set, and that was a typical
I'm older great than that now.
Well, no, you're still a kid, Chuck. It was still, you know, it's great for the kids. That was a great kid film, and you can't always look for the adult satisfaction that Pixar even throws out there, and that's what I enjoyed about films like Guardians of the Galaxy, because the soundtrack was so wonderful, and I sat there just, whatever you're doing, I'm humming along.
Yeah. No, Guardians was phenomenal to watch. It was the most entertaining film I think I saw of the summer.
Yes, absolutely.
And I certainly recommend it to people who just want to unplug and enjoy 2 hours. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time remembering a lot of it. I think it goes down so easily that and smoothly that there's not a lot of calories there. But one thing it does right, I think, as opposed to a lot of the superhero films we're getting, is maybe because Guardians is a Marvel product that we're less familiar with, and it's the first film, and I'm sure what's going to be a franchise, is they had to spend time letting the audience get to know these characters.
Well, they did, and I think they did that well. And I think by casting an unknown like Chris Pratt, not really an unknown, but
from TV's Park and Rec.
That's right. Just the fact that he's not that recognizable guy made it very human, and everyone was, albeit intergalactic war heroes, they were very humanized. Their characters were lovable. There were a lot of elements. There was the maternal love that he had. It was just, there were moments that just kind of plucked at your heartstrings, where you don't expect a Marvel film to do that.
Right, because half the film is trying to get us to like and know who these people are, as opposed to most of the other big budget science fiction and comic book based films, which we now know who Iron Man is and Thor and other backstories, and now we can just get right to the explosions and the overwrought villains. And
right. And hope that the overwrought villains are people like Javier Bardem.
There's an emptiness ultimately to those films, but a lot of really good-looking films. So do you fall on the side of the camp that says, you know, this summer's box office being off so much is a omen for a shifting future, where Hollywood may not be able to gather in as much greenbacks?
Well, I don't think that. I mean, since D.W. Griffith, they've been looking at ways to get
people. The end of summer.
The end of summer. They've been looking for ways to get people to the movies. We were talking earlier about The Jazz Singer, and everybody said it wouldn't make it and it won't be a success. I think it just goes from summer to summer. It just depends on people's financial status. It depends on what's happening and what's out there. Because frankly, what happens in the summer, like we talk about films like Chef and Boyhood and such that are quality films, they get lost in translation. And it's basically the same movie over and over and over again, which is why when it was August and it was time to see Guardians of the Galaxy, I was like, I have to sit through another Marvel adventure because I had a wonderful nap during Transformers 4, is it?
All right, 12, you just 4? Hit upon the film that I would warn everyone against.
It was 3 hours of Transformer fun, which means what? Well, at hour two, they're in Chicago and they're transforming and killing and making things happen and all sorts of things. And I fell asleep for an hour and I woke up. They were in Beijing doing the same thing. So I figured I really didn't lose anything because it's the same people. Nobody has gone, and we'll just keep going until we stop. you know, was Transformers.
The only interesting meta thing to say about Transformers 4 is, for those who don't follow the industry, I think it clearly shows in its third hour that there's no longer any pretense in Hollywood of where they are looking for their future salvation, and that is China. That there is so much shameless pandering in that film to the Chinese market in its final hour.
And that also, I think, that came back to bite them, because there were some issues that came down from some corporations there, too, that were not pleased with the way things were handled. So I think, you know, sometimes it has to be art for art's sake. And
but, you know, I'll watch almost anything, and I found this film nearly unwatchable.
Well, no, I found Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles nearly unwatchable.
Well, there's a pairing.
Yes, that was
unbelievable.
If you really want to punish yourself
weekend.
Yes, if you really want to just let yourself crumble. Even for the kids, I mean, there were...
Well, what is the common denominator of those two films? Michael Bay,
exactly.
He's the producer on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
And the turtles look like, they're human. I mean, the fighting battle scenes, but the newscaster and Megan Fox and the whole kind of, just the whole message was just worthless. I remember Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in the 80s and thinking, oh, that's cute. I wish I had invented that. But now it's just kind of, I don't see where kids will even buy the toys.
I think also a lot of people who are writing these articles in the American press, at least, about the abysmal summer that we've just had, it's not as abysmal as they say. We've just mentioned a number of films that maybe are not perfect, but have many ingredients that are recommendable to people. There are some unique things. Yes, there's only one film that's crossed the $300 million threshold in America, and that's Guardians of the Galaxy, but you know, those are such abstract ways to judge the quality of film. There's a number of these films, even the Tom Cruise failure, Edge of Tomorrow, which critics really enjoyed.
I enjoyed it very much, but then I always enjoyed Tom Cruise because he's quirky and interesting. I mean, this is the last of the summer films, but November Man that just came out, I thought to myself, this could have worked for Tom Cruise. I think, you know, barring his life, that's not what we're looking at. We're looking at
him intruding in his art.
But it's not, because he's Tom Cruise. And one thing about Tom Cruise is that he always grows up in his films. From Rain Man on, he kind of develops himself and he knows how to be directed. So
this was also a summer that had no Avengers, no Batman films, no Pixar films.
No.
Which are all stacking up for 2015.
Mm-hmm. We'll be getting a lot of those to look at.
And 2 years ago, they were lamenting the summer. And of course, last year we had this ball up of so many big box office tentpole films that it was broke all sorts of records. So, you know, I think if listeners go to the Guardian website, the British paper, they have some really good commentary that's a little more even, puts everything in perspective. But I don't know if you sense this, but summer movies as a genre, as a type, you know, I certainly it seems even critics are not immune to lowered expectations when the summer comes. And we judge these films by different criteria than we judge films the rest of the year. But it seems as a type, summer movies, that, you know, there is a struggle going on that most of these big tentpole films are dealing with franchise characters and mostly comic book characters that are in every film now. The world, if not the galaxy, is at risk and is threatened. And to me, it's harder and harder to pull that off when you've seen it over and over and over again. What is the next thing that's going to potentially destroy the universe that this small band of superheroes can stop from happening?
Can stop from happening. I mean, you think about it. In 1968, Planet of the Apes was a summer film. Also, if you think about one of the greatest summer films of all times, that was 1975, and that was Jaws.
Yeah.
And that was just hitting a little beach town with that mean, evil shark. But, you know, now it's on a bigger, greater level. And I think that's why, with respect to what critics think, I'm not sure studios really care, except for last year's The Lone Ranger, where everyone just went, and do not see this, and that was the end of that. But I think that when it comes right down to it, they're trying to appeal to an audience that will buy the Happy Meal toys, that will take the kids, that will buy the gadgets, And there are a lot of kids I know who've seen a lot of these movies more than once.
Well,
so,
and the reality is that most of the box office money coming in now is not from U.S. audiences.
Well, this is very true, too. The European audiences are certainly taking it by storm, and that's why a lot of these films are opening outside of Hollywood's yeah. red carpet.
And I mean, China is starting to open up. I think they built 5,000 new theaters last year in China alone.
Wow.
And so all the studios are looking that way, and India.
Well, even something like The Expendables, which was really expendable, did not open here.
I was an outlier on the Captain America film, The Winter Soldier. Just about everyone I know and most of the press I read gave it glowing reports, and that film just did not work for me. And I've wondered about that all summer. Why was I not taken with it as much as everyone else? And I think it also plays up for me one of the other issues I have with summer movies and the approach that particularly Disney is taking now that it's gobbled up the entire Marvel universe and is linking all of these characters mm-hmm. into this universe where we get the Avengers, where you get Thor and Iron Man and all their comrades fighting together. But then you get these individual films like Captain America where he's mm-hmm. on his own. I found it's getting harder and harder to suspend my disbelief in these storylines when you've just seen a film like The Avengers, and then you get Captain America trying to save the planet, and I keep thinking, well, why doesn't he just call the other guys to help? Because we've been led to believe they all exist now in the same place and same time, and they show up together in other films, and so when these massive global threats arise—
You need more than one cape, in other words.
Exactly. And that, to me, is taking my head out of the fun of some of these films. But
And I only watch these films in 2D anyway, because that's about all I can handle.
It's also one of the greatest times to be a television watcher.
Well, there's certainly a lot going on with television, and just judging by this year's Emmys, it was... Yeah. Quite an interesting year, and unfortunately, I don't watch as much television as now I think I'm going to, because now I'm starting to see, wow, this is really taking an incredible turn when you have actors like Matthew McConaughey mm-hmm. and all of the people that you're seeing, Maggie Gyllenhaal, all of these actors are now going to television. It's kind of like a turn that they took in the 60s where mm-hmm. Actors started realizing that that's where it's at. So that could be an interesting new turn, how the small screen will overcome the big screen.
Hopefully Hollywood will take notice of that. I think what people are responding to in television right now is that these are long-form stories where they mm-hmm. can really get into character and narrative and story matters.
Well, Adrian Brody was just in Houdini, and it was on the History Channel. And was it promoted the way lots of things were? Not really, because I guess they know that people are watching. But I usually have it on Turner Classic Movies on my TV, so that's where I have to start moving around and hitting AMC and other networks, including Netflix.
Well, here we are in September, the official gap between summer and the prestige fall, and we've got Halloween coming up. So this is kind of the dumping ground historically mm-hmm. of films that didn't quite make the cut for summer. So beware of what's coming out the next few weeks. There may be some gems sprinkled in there.
Well, I'm hoping for Cantinflas. Cantinflas opens on September 19th, yeah. and I'm really hoping that that film, with box office is box office is box office, that you can't call. But if it's artistically done and it's an honest story of one of the greatest artists of the last century, that could really make a difference.
I wanted to mention before we wrap up that for our listeners who may not know, you're doing almost weekly movie reviews now on alternating Fridays at 6:30 p.m. on KTSM Channel 9.
Well, it's kind of fun in that it's about film and it's about doing what you love, and I can intersperse everything I do in one movie review, that's why I'm always looking at soundtracks and I'm always looking at all kinds of diverse ways of reporting what's happening in the cinema. So that makes it kind of fun. So
well, it's always fun to talk to you, Philippa.
Well,
so here's hoping you have some good films in your immediate future.
I hope so. Let's keep fingers and toes crossed.
I've been discussing the just concluded summer movie season with fellow Broadcast Film Critics Association member Philippa Solis. You can hear what Philippa has to say about new movies on alternating Fridays at 6:30 p.m. on KTSM Channel 9. You can find more movie reviews and opinions at the Broadcast Film Critics Association website, criticschoice.com. On Film's producers, Norma Martinez. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.